Hi, welcome to After the Collapse on RadioRegent.com. You can find more information about us on AfterTheCollapse.net. But I'm here with Jim Vernon.
Hello.
As always, and I'm Louis Moroni. And we're doing a special interview today for the 12th annual NCRA Homelessness Marathon. You can find out more information at ckut.ca/homeless. But this is an annual marathon raising awareness of homelessness in Canadian communities. It will be airing February 26th, 2014 from 5 p.m. to 7 a.m. Mountain Time on CJSR 88.5 in Edmonton, or you can go to cjsrnews.com. And you'll also be hearing this specific piece that we're doing as a contribution to that marathon right now on Radio Regent. We are here at Sistering on Bloor Street in Toronto, and we are interviewing Carol Allen, presently managing drop-in services for women who need Sistering's support and services. She has been a long-time advocate to end violence against women and children, having spent over 10 years in the shelter community and presently serving as the chair of Nelly's Women's Shelter. Carol is also a dedicated member of the African Caribbean lesbian, gay, and bisexual community, and she sees herself as a feminist, advocate, and agent for change, and will always be part of the struggle for change, both locally and globally. That's so fantastic that you do all those things, so thank you, first of all.
Thanks for having me.
Okay, and welcome.
Thank you.
And since I've been doing all the talking, Jim, do you want to start off the conversation?
Sure. So thank you for joining us. Maybe we can start off just by you telling us a little bit about Sistering in general and how you came to come here and what you do.
Okay. Well, Sistering is a multi-service, multi-purpose agency. And our reason for being is to provide basic supports and services for women in the community, in the city.
Now, you've been involved now for a while, and
yes.
Can you talk about how you got involved?
I have always worked in women's services. At one point, I worked with seniors, and then I moved to working in the drop-in because I thought my skills would be useful there. And I worked at another drop-in before I came to Sistering, and I've now been at Sistering for going on 6 years.
Wow. And so what are the main reasons specifically to have a woman-centric or women-specific shelter?
Well, the main reason is that women's needs are very different from the needs of men. And, I mean, yes, they were drop-ins, but they weren't addressing the specific issues like trauma, violence, sexual abuse, and, you know, dealing with mental health and addictions because you have trauma. And so that's why we are here. That's the main reason for Sistering.
Okay, great. So maybe we could talk a little bit about how the services you offer here specifically differ from other services in the city and what the vision of this place is for the coming years to build those services.
Okay. Well, one of the philosophies of Sistering is that we recognize that women's lives will not change unless society changes. So one of the things that, you know, Sistering does very much is advocacy. You know, staff do advocacy on an individual level with the women, but the agency does advocacy on a global level. What was the rest of the question?
So maybe just to pull back. So how many clients do you serve at any given time on average?
Okay. Well, you know, one thing I wanted to say is that we have a huge, fantastic meal program. It's our food security program, and we do 3 meals a day. We do a breakfast, a very full breakfast, a snack, and a very full lunch. And on our busiest days, we would serve lunch to between 200 and 230 women.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. How do you pay for all this?
Well, our food program is not funded, so our resource department has to go around and find the money so that we can provide like good, healthy food. And we also get support from the food banks, Second Harvest, Daily Bread, other little, you know, stores and groceries in the community also support us. People who know of us, you know, support us as well.
And if I were a client and I came here, mm-hmm. Does it need to be drop in, or do you solicit help? Do you find clients that are on the streets already and encourage them to come into come to Sistering?
A lot of the women have been long term participants of Sistering. Some women are referred there through one of the social services office or from another community agencies. Some people, you know, walk off the street. And I remember this story that this woman came in one day and, you know, she had been having a hard time and looking for services, looking for help. And she said she was just walking down the street and then she saw Sistering. And she said, you know, an angel must have sent her there because that was exactly what she needed. And, you know, she came in, she engaged with us, you know, we supported her. She still comes here. So, you know, that's how women come to us.
So the name Sistering really speaks to your approach to helping others. You treat each other as sisters.
Yes. And when women come here, they're treated with dignity and respect. As you know, drop-ins also operate on an anonymous level, so you don't have to give your name when you come in. A lot of times, you know, when women first come in, you know, they like to scope the place, you know, come back a few times before they actually even engage with staff. I mean, when we see a new woman, you know, we will give her some time and then go and say hello and whatever and let her know if she needs anything. We're there, you know, make sure to have a meal. If you need a shower, let us know. And that's, we take it from there.
And then people that have come and dropped in and they become regular users of the services here, do they also take on a sistering role with other people?
Oh, yes. They bring in their friends. Sometimes, you know, they see women out on the street and they think that, oh, the woman needs sistering help, so they will, you know, tell her or bring her. We made up these little cards to give to participants so that when they're out and they see a woman who needs help, they can give the woman the card because she may not want to come right away, and at least they have some idea of what's out there.
And what's your relationship with other services in the city, other drop-ins, other shelters, the city itself?
Well, you know, we have a collaborative relationship with the other drop-ins, especially like the 416 that also services just women. We all belong to an umbrella organization called the Toronto Drop-In Network, and they do work, you know, in terms of, you know, changing drop-ins, making them better, lobbying the city, identifying needs that, you know, need to be brought out there.
Do you feel like the homeless in Toronto are well served by the services that are available?
So. You know, I think it could be bigger, it could be better, but at least we have something, so then we have to build on that. I mean, really, what we need to do, and most of us are already working on that, is to have safe, supportive, affordable housing for people. Mm.
So you said earlier that your food program was not funded externally, and so you have to solicit donations.
Yes.
Was Sistering, or were those programs funded previously and the funding has dried up, or has it always been independent from?
Yeah, I don't think, and as far as I know, food was never funded. I mean, right now, there's a small program called Food to Drop-Ins that's done by the city, and what they provide is yogurt, milk, and eggs, because, you know, for calcium and protein. And so, you know, the drop-ins on the list, would every week we would get a certain amount of eggs and milk and yogurt, which goes a long way, because we, you know, it's difficult to keep buying those things. Yeah.
And so how much input do the drop-ins have with the city's services, for example, like the yogurt and eggs? Mm-hmm. Do you do they provide that under advisement from the drop-ins to say, you know, these are the things that we would like, or you're just using the services that have been provided?
No, it was done under advisement in collaboration with the city and some of the executive directors of some of the drop-ins, mm-hmm. and also in collaboration with the food banks.
Oh, okay.
Yes. Yeah.
So maybe we can just return to the issue of safe community housing, which mm-hmm. you referred to a minute ago.
Yes.
This has been obviously since the recent administration took mm-hmm. charge, community housing has been a key issue with the
yes.
city. So maybe you could talk about how, in the role you have, you've seen community housing in Toronto change in your time, and what the trends mm-hmm. are and what the issues
well,
are.
Well, I mean, you know, community housing, TCHC, whatever you want to call it, you know, it's gotten less and less, and the issue is that more and more people need that type of housing. They need housing that's geared towards their income, because a lot of people cannot afford a $900 rent for a one bedroom when your salary is so small. Worse yet, if you're on Ontario Works as a single person, you know, you're receiving between $500 and $600. So housing has always been one of the key issues for us, because we spend a lot of time working with women trying to find the right type of housing for them, especially supportive housing where, you know, there's staff on site, staff who are knowledgeable about the issues that, you know, the tenants are facing. But, I mean, more and more what we see is that, you know, just the other day I was listening to the news and they were talking about, you know, there's another boom in housing and house prices. And, you know, I'm thinking, but nobody is building rental apartments, you know. And, I was thought to myself, well, why doesn't the city, you know, anytime somebody asks for a license, why doesn't the city or whoever does that stuff mandate that they have a certain amount of units that are just for rent, at rent geared to income? Because right now it's very, very difficult to find good housing, proper housing. A lot of our women are in rooming houses, or they're in basements that are moldy, you know, not well taken care of. And, you know, when you're living in a situation like that where you're so miserable, you know, a lot of women say, you know what, well, I might as well sleep on the park bench because I'm paying like $800 and I feel like I'm already sleeping outside.
I'd like to send this out to Harper and Obama and David Miller and the Canadian imperialist pink state built on. What was it built on? Fairness and equality? Was it built on justice? Was it built on racial equality? What was it built on? This is the richest in the world, they say. Poorest in the heart. This dream has been a nightmare from the very start. These roads are built on native blood and Africans in chains. Nightmare. This dream has been a nightmare from the start. look on the TV and you see them babies with the flies in their eyes. Even starving children make big business from the west to the east. Let's start a revolution and make our country called peace. We've got the richest in the world.
Welcome back to After the Collapse with Jim Vernon and Lewis Maroney. I'm Lewis, and we are at afterthecollapse.net and air Mondays at 2 p.m. on RadioRegent.com. That was Faith Nolan with The Richest in the World, and we are going to return to our discussion with Carol Allen, who manages drop-in services at Toronto's Sisterine. This is our contribution to the 12th annual NCRA Homelessness Marathon, airing February 26th, 2014 from 5 p.m. to 7 a.m. on 88.5 FM CJSR in Edmonton, and streaming from their website at cjrsnews.com. So you were talking about the state of housing in Toronto, and really good point about all these new condos coming up, mm-hmm. and you know, why doesn't the city mandate a certain proportion of those units to be rental?
Yes.
And it sounds like your clients are not necessarily homeless.
Some of them are. Yeah, some of them are. Some of them are precariously housed. Some of them are couch surfing. We have women right now who sleep in out of the cold programs during the night because, you know, a lot of times the shelters are full.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and sometimes some women, they can't manage the shelter. So the out of the cold works fine for them.
So you're a service, essentially, obviously you don't necessarily need to be homeless, but you're in a tough situation.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you're coming from a violent environment as well.
Yeah, from violence. We have women who come here because, you know, they work, but they're just poor. We have a lot of seniors who come here because they're socially isolated. You know, they meet their friends here, they play cards, they knit, they do whatever. So it's, you know, whatever your needs are, we really do try to assist you. And if we really, really can't help, then, you know, we will find somebody to help you and also work with that agency and you so that, you know, we just don't send you off by yourself.
Right. And when we came to your to the location here,
mm-hmm.
I was surprised by how big it is.
Yes.
Three floors.
Yes.
But you said to me, space is still tight.
Yes.
How many people work here, and what do you need more space for?
We need more space for programs. A year after we moved into this new building, we outgrew the space. Like we don't have enough office space because we also are doing programs and partnerships with agencies. So then when those staff come in, we have to have a place to put them. We also have a basement. It's a huge basement. Part of it is finished, part of it is not. And, you know, we have office space down there and we use it for programs. But most days, you know, we're juggling. Even today, you know, I was just lucky because of the snowstorm, the staff didn't come in.
So we have a place to do our
interview. Yes.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, and it goes to show you how needed, you know, the services are, and also how comfortable women feel coming here.
Right.
Yes.
And it's kind of ironic, given the what you'd said about housing and how the city should provide some rental units in new condos.
Yes.
That you are actually yourself, as a drop-in, you're struggling for space. You're struggling for a home.
Yes, we are. We are.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, it took a lot, you know, to get this building and to renovate it. So I don't think we're going anywhere soon. Mm-hmm. So we're just trying to, you know, fix it up, you know, keep it going, make it, you know, as comfy as possible for the women who come here. And, you know, who knows what's in the future.
How well would you say Toronto is doing in terms of facilitating organizations like yours and aiding people who are in precarious situations compared to other major North American cities during this time?
Apart from Vancouver and a few other places, I'm not, you know, very current on, you know, on that whole sector. But, I mean, I think in Toronto we do really, really well, but we can also do better. As you know, they've now opened another shelter because women didn't have very many shelter beds. And what had happened was that, you know, a few women had gotten sexually assaulted and it was caught on camera. And, you know, so then we started to say, well, you know what, we need more beds. We need more beds. And it was a lot of pushing and fighting, all the drop-ins, other community agencies and OCAP, you know, lots of pressuring of the city. And, you know, they finally relented and they opened up, you know, a 30-bed shelter in Parkdale. And right now they're looking for, you know, somebody to run it permanently because they are running it now. And we're also working on a 24-hour drop-in for women. And that would be located downtown because usually at night around here, it's pretty quiet. Because, you know, if there's no shelter beds, at least there's a drop-in that a woman can go to get away from outside, you know, get away from the weather, have something to eat, get off her feet.
Do you think that the obstacles, or do you get the sense that the obstacles when dealing with the city and looking for enhanced services is based more on administrative obstacles or money?
I don't think it's money. I think it's administrative issues and also demonizing of poor people. Because, you know, you're always here, well, we're already giving them so much, you know, what more do they want? Why can't they get a job and, you know, clean up and help themselves? And I think a lot of it is the attitude of people in the city and as well as, you know, the powers that be.
Right, like the specific administration in charge has a trickle-down effect on,
yes,
on the attitudes of the people that work for the city.
Yes. Yeah. And I mean, I was quite surprised when they agreed to do the 24-hour, the new beds. Because, well, I know it looked so bad on them because, you know, women were getting sexually assaulted. You know, one, I think, was one woman, you know, it would happen once and then later on in the night it happened again and it was caught on camera. And it's like, you know what? This is what's happening. And, you know, you have to, you know, these are vulnerable people and we have to, you know, support them and you have to protect them.
Recently, we had some cold weather and there were some cold weather warnings. Mm-hmm. And I think that takes the city to an enhanced awareness of homeless people and
yes,
they open up more drop-ins and mm-hmm, shelters. But there was a bit of a controversy or a news report mm-hmm, where the weather went up like a degree and it was still cold,
yes,
but they had closed the additional...
Yeah, I think it was two Fridays ago, and it was really, really cold. And they had terminated the cold alert, but it was still really, really cold.
Was that a surprise to you, or has this happened before?
No, that was a surprise to me, because I, you know, I found it really, really cold. And I was, you know... I mean, I'm told it's a calculation they do with weather services, whatever, but it's like, it's really cold, you know?
So what did Sistering do as an organization when that happened? Or it just happened too quickly?
Well, you know, we're open 7 days a week, and we have 2 days where we're open at extended hours. We open to 5. We're normally open 9:30 to 3. So, you know, once women know that we have the extended hours, they can come in, get a hot meal, you know, rest, relax, do whatever it is that they need to do. And then we also, you know, when they're leaving, make sure they go to someplace that's warm, i.e. another drop-in or the warming center, and we make sure, you know, they get a token so that they can get there. They don't have to walk.
Mm. How many hours do you work a week?
We're supposed to work 35 hours. Yes. Yes.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. But, you know, it's, you know, when I tell people I do this type of work, and, you know, they think it's all doom and gloom, and they're quite surprised when I tell them it's not. And I said, you know, I've met so many wonderful and fabulous participants from, you know, all different walks of life. And anytime I feel down, you know, I go in the drop-in and I sit in the drop-in to remind myself that that's why I'm here.
Wow. Yeah.
So maybe it's on the issue of not so doom and gloom. Mm-hmm. So having spoken of the economic realities that necessitate a place like this existing, on the other hand, you don't just provide minimal services, mm-hmm. that is, stopgaps for people who are precarious, but with your various programs and studios, mm-hmm. you seem to inspire creativity and culture in the people who you service. So we can talk a little bit about the studios you run and how they affect people's lives.
Okay, so we have two studios. One is a ceramic studio and one is a fabric and wool studio. And in order to be in the studio, you must be creative and willing to learn, or you've already coming with some kind of, you know, creativity. You're already an artist, you know, in your own right. You were doing that before sistering. And with our ceramic studio, women are taught how to basically set up their own little business. You know, so they're taught how to market themselves, how to do their taxes, you know, things like that. And the money that they make is a little extra for them, you know, because they're all usually on some kind of assistance, usually Ontario Disability Support Program.
Now, owning a small business is obviously a lot of work, and it's mm-hmm. hard to even get by. Yes. Trying to start a business. So are there success stories that have come out of this yet?
Oh, there are many, you know, many, many, many. Some of the women, their stuff gets, you know, gets sold a lot. Because people recognize it, so, you know, they come into the store, or sometimes they call here. With our fabric and wool studio, it's fairly new, so we're still trying to get it up and running and get known out there. But the women weave beautiful things and knit and crochet beautiful things. So it's just to get them out there and get their things sold.
And then do the sales help sistering as well?
The sales go, all the monies go back to the women.
Wow.
Yes.
Wow.
With the ceramic studio, we buy the clay. So the women pay like a small stipend for the clay.
Right.
Yeah. But a lot of the wool and we have here in the sponge studio is donated.
Do you drink out of a Sistering Inspiration Studio mug?
I have one nice one at home. I use it as decoration, though. Yes. Yes.
So it's interesting that that's one of the programs you have, one that's not just related to, you know, say, as our mm-hmm. Prime Minister likes to yes. push a sort of minimal job training, but one that involves the whole person as not just laboring, but also mm-hmm. creative. How important is that kind of outlet for someone leaving a traumatic situation or trying to build in a precarious situation?
I think it does wonders, because it taps into a place in you that may not be totally scarred by trauma, mm-hmm. and it can help you, you know, heal, look at your life differently, as well as, you know, getting a little money to kind of help yourself. So I think it does wonders for the women. Yeah.
Remember Galaxy. Remember where the round 6 months say. Time I go trade, yeah. Every gully I go run, yeah. Even money.
Welcome back to After the Collapse with Jim Vernon and Lewis Moroney. I'm Lewis, and we are at afterthecollapse.net and air Mondays at 2 p.m. on RadioRegent.com. That was the Mighty Diamonds with I Need a Roof, and we are going to return to our discussion with Carol Allen, who manages drop-in services at Toronto's Sistering. This is our contribution to the 12th annual NCRA Homelessness Marathon, airing February 26th, 2014 from 5 p.m. to 7 a.m. on 88.5 FM CJSR in Edmonton, and streaming from their website at cjrsnews.com.
How deep does the do your services go in terms of providing, because you a lot of trauma has been experienced by a lot of your clients. Do you have a psychologist or psychiatrist on staff?
Well, actually, speaking of that, those services here have really grown, because right now we have one counselor that deals with women who have had or do have addiction issues and trauma. And we also have a Spanish-speaking counselor that deals with, you know, whatever issue the woman has, whatever trauma she's trying to sort through. And then we have one who just, you know, she's for everybody. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we have those three. We also have a psychiatrist on staff. And she mostly does assessments and diagnoses for ODSP or for other, if, you know, your family doctor needs help with things like that. She doesn't see long-term because there's not enough time. And we have two psychiatrists, actually, and they come two afternoons a week. And we have two family doctors who come 2 days a week and a community health nurse as well.
Oh, wow.
Yes, it's really growing. It's through a partnership with Inner City Health Associates.
Do you share those types of resources with other drop-ins as well? Are there ones that work cross drop-ins?
Oh, yes. And then, I mean, there's a shelter not too far from here. And their women will come here and see the psychiatrist or the doctor, or they come here for meals too as well. And we work with agencies like the Barbara Schleifer, Jean Tweed. You know, we work with Park, which is another drop-in in Parkdale.
And what about across provincial borders? Do you have relationships with other drop-ins in other provinces? And do you have clients that have traveled from Vancouver, for example, and have been told to make sure they go to Sistering when they get to Toronto?
I'm not sure if they've been told, but we have had women like coming from another province and then they somehow find themselves here. Sometimes I'm not sure how, but you know, they come here and then, you know, we try to assist them. Mm-hmm. And I mean, sometimes other drop-ins from other provinces have, you know, contacted us to get, you know, support and consult around setting up a drop-in such as this, such as Sistering.
And is there more... along the same lines, is there sharing of information that Sistering will do with established drop-ins?
Oh, yes. Yeah, we do. The drop-ins, you know, we're a tight group. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we don't want to reinvent everything all the time. So we do share information. And a lot of times, the Toronto Drop-In Network will facilitate that.
Oh, so what are some of... Do you have an example of maybe a recent change that you've made that's been based on best practices from... learned by someone else?
Well, one of the big things that we've done in the past year and a half was to develop a new reporting tool for our drop-in services, because we have to report every quarter to the city, but, you know, the tool wasn't really capturing exactly the work that the drop-in does. It's more than just serving food and giving you a place to shower. But all the little things that, you know, say a woman can volunteer here and help in the kitchen, things like that, that build your self-esteem. So they got some funding from the city to actually develop this tool, which is working, you know, the first time we used it, it had its glitches, but it works really well because we can accurately show everything that we do now. I mean, the city doesn't use all the information because they just want number of meals, number of clients, number of referrals. But now they know that, you know, yes, we had an outing and we had 60 women attend the outing. We had, you know, 200 women for the quarter do yoga or do Reiki. So things like that that are important to just to get along as a human being in this world, you know, we want to show them that, you know, it's more than just the bare bones. It's all these things.
So maybe just returning to how we opened, when mm-hmm. we spoke both about the local work Sistering does with the clients, but mm-hmm. also advocacy done at the city level, the provincial level, yeah. national level, and the global level. Mm-hmm. Obviously, the goal of Sistering is not just to maintain services for those mm-hmm. in precarious positions, but yeah. Work towards ending precariousness yes. as it exists.
Yes.
So maybe give us some examples sort of locally or at a larger level of the specific kinds of advocacy work that are done to work to eliminate the conditions that produce that precariousness?
You know, we do work with OCAP. You know, the women also have a social action group where they actually go out and protest on the different marches. You know, we've been doing some work with No More Silence and the December 6th Association as well. You know, as long as it affects women's lives, you know, we are there. You know, we lend our support because it's going to affect the women. So we also have to put energy into those things, into making sure that we play a part, because not just changing is how it's changed. So we want to play a part in how things are changed and how things are made better for women live in precarious situations. We may not be able to help, you know, every woman that comes here, but one of our philosophies is that we work with the woman where they're at, not where we think that they should be. And so sometimes it means accepting that, well, you know what, this person may not get better than what they are now. And then how do we support them in staying where they are because it's working for them? How do we make sure that they're safe? How do we help a system in maintaining their housing?
Is that natural for you as a person, or was that something that you needed to learn for yourself?
No, it was natural. Once you learn the, you know, the nuts and bolts, you know, the forms, you know, navigating the system and stuff, you know, those things. But I mean, it comes from, I think you also have to have your own sense of social justice and want to see, you know, you want to see things different. You want to see a fair society. So I think, you know, if you have those things, then the other parts come easily.
And that's what drives you as a person.
Yes, yes. I should have gone to school probably for a social worker, but I went to school for English and history. And, you know, if I had had good advice, you know, I would have gone the other way. But I still found myself here. And I think for a long time, I felt like, oh my God, you know, things are not changing. I'm working. Things are the same. Maybe I should go work for IBM. But it's like, Carol, you have no computer skills. You cannot go to IBM. And, you know, one day, you know, I thought about it and I said, you know what, you're already where you're supposed to be. So just accept it and do it the best that you can. So I am here.
Well, there you go. And that's the advice you give to your clients, too.
Yes, yes.
Do you, and then the other people that work here as well, I mean, I imagine you form strong bonds with them. Mm-hmm. And are they all, is it social justice that drives them?
Yes. Yeah. And I mean, when we hire, you know, we look for that, you know, we look to make sure that the person has an understanding, a good understanding of, you know, how the issues affect women. Because if you don't have the understanding, then, you know, you're not going to be able to work from a particular perspective. You know, we can teach you the practical things, but you already have to come with that knowledge and that understanding.
Is it hard to find people to work here?
No, not really. But, you know, you want to find you know, women who will be a good fit with the women in the drop-in and with the other staff. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we have had staff who have been here, who have been around for as long as Sistering has been around. And, you know, the women, some women have known them for all this time and, you know, they really love those staff and, you know, always looking for them. So it's good. So there's a continuity that, you know, we have the beginning and we have, you know, the newer staff. You know, we've had staff that's been here like 17 years, 18 years. So it's a nice continuum. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you said that the clients themselves have their own social justice group that's mm-hmm. personally
yes.
involved in advocacy.
Yeah.
Is that, do you think, an effect of, or at least in part an effect of recognizing through sistering what can be done when people come together with a sense of the capacity for change? Mm-hmm.
Yes, and I think, you know, it gives women, it really gives them a different sense of self when they know that, you know what, I can also work on another level to change my situation. I don't, you know, yes, I'm having this, but I can also do this other thing too. And they love when they go on marches. You know, we have a large Cantonese and Mandarin speaking population. A lot of those women are now starting to go on the marches. Before, you know, they weren't that interested, but I'm not sure what changed, but they've been going and they're interested. And it's really good to see, because most of that population are senior women.
I've traveled around this country from shore to shining shore. It really made me wonder the things I heard and saw. I saw the weary farmer a plowing sod and loam. I heard the auction hammer just a knocking down his home. But the banks are made of marble with a guard at every door. And the bolts are stuffed with silver that the farmer sweated for. I've seen the seamen standing idly by the shore, and I heard their bosses saying, got no work for you no more. But the banks are made of marble with a guard at every door. And the vaults are stuffed with silver that the seamen sweated for. I've seen the weary miner scrubbing coal dust from his back, and I've heard his children crying, got no coal to heat the shack. But the banks are made of marble with a guard at every door, and the vaults are stuffed with silver that the miner sweated for. I've seen my brothers working throughout this mighty land. I've prayed we'd get together and together make a stand. Then we might own those banks of marble with a guard at every door. And we would share those vaults of silver that we have sweated for.
Welcome back to After the Collapse with Jim Vernon and Lewis Moroney. I'm Lewis, and we are at afterthecollapse.net and air Mondays at 2 p.m. on RadioRegent.com. That was Pete Seeger with Banks of Marble. And we are going to return to our discussion with Carol Allen, who manages drop-in services at Toronto's Sistering. This is our contribution to the 12th annual NCRA Homelessness Marathon, airing February 26th, 2014 from 5 p.m. to 7 a.m. on 88.5 FM CJSR in Edmonton, and streaming from their website at cjrsnews.com.
So let's say you... let's say the government came to Sistering and said, you know what, we recognize the great work that you do.
Mm-hmm.
You're a necessary service, and we want you to be able to do everything that you want to do. Mm-hmm. Here is a blank check.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think you'd do? Do you think the sistering would just be the same but larger? Or are there things that you don't do because you don't have the money?
We would build our own building. Oh, yes, for sure. And maybe a shelter, because, you know, that's one of the things that women have been saying. Oh, sistering should have a shelter. We should have a shelter. Yeah, we would have, like, our own building with apartments, you know, and lots of support. That's what I would do with it.
Is there a sort of a capital project that Sistering has on the books that they would eventually like to raise the money for something like that, like a shelter?
No, but we've, you know, as I mentioned before, that we've outgrown our space, and, you know, which meant that we outgrew our kitchen. So we are in the process of renovating and getting a bigger and better kitchen, and also to renovating the drop-in, because since we've moved in, we haven't done any work to it, just, you know, keeping up. So right now we're just in the process of starting that, and services will still be happening. It'll just be happening at a different location. So we're not closing.
And the funds for the renovations, are those separate applications to the city?
Well, not the city. The city supported it, and we applied to the Lynn. And the Lynn, you know, gave us the money, as we also fundraise. For the past 3 years, we've been doing this event called Kitchen Sisters, where we get high-profile chefs to cook meals, and then people buy the tickets, and they come and they eat. So we've done that also. Yeah.
When's the next Kitchen Sisters?
Last year was the last one, I was told.
Oh!
So they're not doing one this year. But we do have a signature event every year, Dynamic Divas, and it should be happening in June, I think. Yeah, usually happens in June.
And what's LHIND?
Local Health Integration Network. So they're, you know, they're, it's an offshoot of the Ministry of Health.
Yes. The federal.
Yeah, provincial.
Provincial.
Yeah, and they're the ones now that, you know, like give the funding, like the money flows through them to hospitals, agencies like that. You know, we apply to whatever from them. We have to report our stats to them to show them that we're doing, you know, the work that we say that we're doing.
And how is how have you seen any effects of the, or what effects have you seen from the current federal government on your ability to do the work that you need to do in terms of funding and policy?
Well, I mean, we don't really receive any funding from the province, but the province does give the money to the city for us to run the drop-ins and also to, you know, to maintain social housing. So it affects us that way. Because I think a few years ago they downloaded everything onto the city, a certain amount of money, and then that's been it. So then the city has to manage it. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, now they've started a new process where everybody now has to, like, apply for the funding that they were getting previously. You know, you would do your application, and then you would report your stats at the end of the year, and then, you know, you'd keep on going. But now it's open to any and everybody. Hmm. So we are not guaranteed funding anymore as such. Yeah.
Early in our conversation, you said that one of the strong problems with doing the work you do is the mm-hmm. stigmatization of poverty.
Mm-hmm.
We're in the paradoxical situation of having a mayor who's very proud of his relationships with mm-hmm. people in community housing.
Yes.
And at the same time is one of the chief architects mm-hmm. of the complaints about professional protesters and takers.
Yes, yes.
So in the unique environment we have, mm-hmm. What are some ways that we can work to both identify that stigmatization and work to overcome it?
I think, you know, we can be vocal when we hear things happening. I think, you know, we should be lobbying the city, you know, when they're making their decisions around their budgets. You know, the communities should be going there. As if they believe that things should be different, they should be going to those talks and trying to influence, you know, where the money goes. Every year they give money to the police. How much money are they going to give to the police? Well, of course, if we're creating criminals because people are poor and they have to steal food, then of course you need more police to keep them reined in. But a lot of times, we don't make those connections. Yeah.
And that's part of the arguments that you propose to the city in terms of how they allocate their budget.
Yes. Yeah. And I mean, to go back to the minimum wage, I still don't understand why they couldn't just raise it to the recommended $14.25. They raised it $1 more. What's $1 going to do for anybody? It's not going to do anything. They're going to lose it in taxes.
Yeah. Why even make a decision like that? Yeah. You're going to raise it to something that's respectable. Why do you hire people to recommend what the minimum wage should be mm-hmm. if you're not going to follow the recommendations?
Exactly. And I firmly believe it's to appease big business, because while we are lobbying, they're doing their massive lobbying, and it's all about keeping work in the city and in the province, so that you have to make the big corporations happy. But really, the corporations are the ones that always win. It's not the little people. It's not the small businesses.
And so there's more people that require housing. There's mm-hmm. less housing available. The housing market continues to become more and more expensive to enter into. What would you say are the main changes that you've seen culturally in your neighborhood, given these factors?
In my own neighborhood in particular, and I live downtown, so I see a lot more, people out on the street, during the day and during the night as well. I've noticed that there's been an increase, and a lot of homeless youth too. I'm not seeing that many women, but I see a lot of, older men and young men. Mm. Yeah. Whereas when I first moved there, you would hardly see. You wouldn't really see guys outside.
Hmm. So given all we've talked about mm-hmm. In terms of the extreme challenges you face and the mounting problems that mm-hmm. seem to be arising, you still sound like a very hopeful person. So if you can tell us a bit about how you stay positive and hopeful in this place.
Oh, I guess I feel like I'm putting, a lot of my energy into supporting women and also, to engender change. So that makes me feel good. I like coming to work. When I'm away, on holidays and I come back, I go and I see the women and they want to know, how was your holiday? How was this? How was that? I sit and I chat. So those things are, those things keep me going. And, when I see some of the issues and problems that women face, it wants to make me work even harder, because, you can get all, angry and pissed off and just sit there. But, you have to use that to do something. And, I think in our own way, because not all of us, are able to go out and march or go down to City Hall and do a deputation, but I think whatever ways that you can do it. I mean, we have this one elderly gentleman, he's a vet and he lives in Vancouver, and for years that he's been sending us money. Now he's, how much money does a vet have? But he's been sending us money, it's about 10, 15 years, and, always, telling us, what you're doing is important, keep it up. And it's, people like that actually who, give us money to kind of keep going and to feed the women.
So, that's a great point. People can, I imagine, go to sistering.org mm-hmm. and donate directly to the drop-in.
Yes.
If you were to be able to give advice to the millions and millions of people listening mm-hmm. right now on how the best ways to get involved, given the different responsibilities that people have in life, mm-hmm. from from the minimum you could do to the most, what would you say?
One of the things that's really important is volunteering, because a lot of our non-funded programs are run by volunteers. So, when we have our fundraising events, we need, tons of women, and they come, and they do the event, which, then that means The agency doesn't have to be using all their staff resources to do the event. And of course, you know, donating whatever you can. If you know you have a lot and you can give a lot, then certainly do. Because really, I guess, you know, it's not going to take that much away from you. And, you know, I think, as I said before, people really have to think about the kind of society that they would like to see, you know, not only for now, but in the future. Yeah, I think really we really need to look at that, because right now, you know, it feels like it's mean-spirited, it's shaming and blaming, and then of course we have Rob Ford on top of that. And yes, Toronto, you know, they always say Toronto the good, but right now it's Toronto the mediocre and mean-spirited, you know. And I think a lot of people really are not like that, but then, you know, you need to speak up. Yeah, you need to speak up. You have to speak up for people who can't.
Well, Carol Alain, thank you very much. That's a perfect way to end the interview, I think. People listening can speak up in the various ways that you've talked about. They can go to sisterine.org to learn more about this place. And Jim and I want to thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us.
No problem. You know, I'm very happy to be able to talk to you guys. It wasn't so hard.
Okay, great.
All right. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.